Get road trip ready with a service checkup at your local Chevy dealer. They can save you time and money and get the job done right the first time, worry-free. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for current service specials or to schedule a test drive.
Hi, I'm Paul Listick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain.
I love Lucy, and she loves me. We're as happy as two can be. Sometimes we quarrel, but then how we love making up again. Lucy kisses like no one can. She's my missus and I'm her man. And life is heaven, you see. 'Cause I love Lucy, yes, I love Lucy. And Lucy loves me.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to Behind the Curtain. This is Paul Listick from WGN-TV, but getting to talk about the world of entertainment as we do here on the podcast. And that music is known by everybody on this planet as probably the most classic theme of all time, the theme to I Love Lucy. And we are going to talk all things Lucy and some Desi today, as my guest is the incredible actress, singer, dancer, Emmy Award winner. She's got it all. Lucy Arnaz, yes, the daughter of Lucy and Desi. And Lucy, it's just a real honor and pleasure to have you with me.
I appreciate that intro very much. Thank you so much.
There's a lot to talk to you about. Now, look, I know that everybody who interviews you tells you how crazy they are about your family and you and all the work. I do want to take a step outside of the and up the craziness a little bit, because I do want you to know that in addition to being a huge fan, that part of I have a celebrity type collection thing. I own your mother's actual sunglasses that I got from Gary, the phone from the Ricardo living room, several original scripts, your mom's makeup that she kept in her driver Frank's car, Vivian Vance's shoes, a lipstick with your mother's imprint on it from her lips, a dress, a design that she signed off on along with Aloys Jensen and Jess Oppenheimer. I just want you to know, you got one of the top crazies with you.
I guess you're not going to be wanting to talk about my career then, huh?
Don't be so sure. I've seen you perform. Oh, no, we will talk about what you've got going on.
Look, you're collecting things that make you happy because they remind you of something that was bringing you pure joy. And what's wrong with that? Nothing.
Absolutely. And by the way, and this is probably true, too, my brother's name is Rick. He was named after Little Ricky. He was born in 53.
Oh,
my parents named him after Little Ricky. So there you go. But the reason, what triggered me wanting to reach out to you is, we're going to play a little music and then you'll understand.
This is Let's Talk to Lucy, starring Lucille Ball. A very warm welcome to you all. I'm Gary Morton, and now, Let's Talk to Lucy.
Hi, this is Lucy. And as Gary said, welcome. Welcome to our very first show. This is a very exciting event for me to be back on radio. Now, you might ask, what's so exciting about a radio show in view of all the television I do? Well, most of my professional life, I have been saying words somebody else wrote for me. Oh, I've had some pretty wonderful writers. But nevertheless, I've been playing a role. And now, I just want to be me, Lucille Ball.
And that she is. Lucy, this radio show from 64 to 66, I'll be honest, I know everything I thought. I never knew about these. How about you? Did you always know these existed? How did you come across this incredible brief radio show playing now on Sirius XM Channel 104?
Yes, I did know that they existed. I was about 13 when she was taping them, with her reel-to-reel tape recorder that she schlepped everywhere. But I wasn't aware of who she was talking to. You know, at 13, you're paying attention to your first boyfriend and getting into high school. And but after she passed away, we of course kept them along with lots of other things in archives and vaults and files. And throughout the years, I would come across them and say, "Oh yeah, we need to keep those." I don't know why we need to keep them, but you know, it's Lucille Ball, and you don't throw anything away, right? So we kept them and kept them and kept them, and thought, "What do we do with them?" Up until recently, when suddenly podcasts were happening and a lot of streaming and there was more audio media out there, there really wasn't a platform that you could do anything with these shows. And it wasn't until recently when we were helping the company produce another documentary on my mom and my dad and really going a deep dive into archives. They said, I understand your mother did a radio show from 1964 to 65, and do you still have those? Do you know anything about them? I said, yeah, I do. They're in a thing, and I don't know. I'm not even sure what the list is, who they. So I looked into it, and I got the list that I'd never seen. I'd never seen the list of who she talked to on this show. Oh, my God. 234 programs. 240, but a few of them are missing, so there's 234 with the cream of the crop of everybody that was available back then. I mean, some of the people you would know, the Dean Martins, Frank Sinatras, Barbra Streisands, Bing Crosby's, Vivian Vance's, you know, Hedda Hopper, Edith Head, Gail Gordon, Gypsy Rose Lee, incredible amounts of people. And then some people that you probably don't know, people from today don't have a clue who they are, but they were important people back then. And they're 10-minute interviews where she just asks them all kinds of interesting little chit-chat, personal, family, heart questions, like, what do you like to do in your spare time, and how do you raise your children, and what do you think about nutrition, and, I mean, where would you go if you had a year off and a sabbatical and you could do anything you want? I mean, really nice, fun, interesting things that you would love to know about some of these people as well as other people that you know. You know, this is great dinner conversation type of questioning. And so I made a few phone calls and thought maybe there's a home for this now. It seems like a shame that they should just be forever lost. And SiriusXM jumped into the pot. Once they heard a couple of them, they said, oh my God, this is gold. This is great. And gave her own pop-up channel, which they never do for this kind of thing. And it's just gone through the roof. We're very, very proud of what we've been able to do. Working with a couple of great teams, Judy Pastore and 800-pound gorilla, our technology guys who've been doing all the editing. And we didn't have to even touch the sound quality. It was that good. It was this good as soon as they started playing the tapes. But they, you know, cut the air out. They had to put new music on it and stuff so they didn't have to pay the music royalties to the Hey, Look Me Over song that my mother used always. And then I did some wraparound interviews with other people, letting my mother's voice ask them some of these same questions and get their answers today. So Rosie O'Donnell is answering some of Mom's questions, and Rex Reed and Amy Poehler, Bette Midler, Marlo Thomas, Robert Klein, Randy
Ronnie
Rainbow,
Howard.
You know, Ron Howard, yes, Carol Burnett.
I have a
list of people, and I called them, and they all said yes, which has been thrilling.
First of all, I have to tell you, I've been obsessed with the channel since August 5th when it premiered. I literally had it in my calendar, and I cover politics for WGN, so I'm supposed to be watching and listening to politics 24/7, and I did up until August 5th. And on that day, I mean, I'm serious. From the minute I get up, whether I'm in my car or I'm walking the dogs, I have to see who's. And of course, I've heard so many of these interviews many times, but let me dig in a little bit because, and some of the names again, just I want to share some that Bob Hope, and you mentioned some, but Debbie Reynolds, Ruth Burrell, Milton Burrell's wife, but talking about adopting a kid and other things. Jack Warner. Just Gertrude Berg, I heard for the first time actually the other day. Julie Newmar. Here's what's really cool. These interviews, even when you know the names, they happen at a point in her career. Barbara Streisand, your mother says, oh, you're 21. She goes, I'm 22. You know, getting these.
I'm 22.
At 22. And I had always heard Streisand was quirky in her younger days, and you get that in the interview. The thing is, it's the moment in time when these things were done. You read fan magazines, but you didn't know the kind of in-depth questions your mom talked about with these celebrities because we just didn't. Mm-hmm. And I guess they were willing to share it with her.
Yes. Yes. It became, even though I guess they had to know this was going to be going out on CBS radio, it was the fact that it was Lucy. It was not in a recording studio ever. Was either at her home, their home, a soundstage somewhere, over at her studio in her little dressing room area. So it was very chatty and friendly, and I think they were disarmed, it seems to me. Doesn't it feel like that? It's almost like people have always done a lot of interviews. If you're in this business, you do your life is about doing interviews. But they were disarmed, I think, by the types of things that she wanted to talk to them about. And so without even thinking about it, suddenly they're talking about their deepest beliefs and secrets. And, you know, she was smart enough not to ask embarrassing questions, things that they wouldn't want to talk about. But they were things that everybody cares about. And she knew, just as I know, and I did a radio show too for a while, and I knew that celebrities or notable people like to talk about other things other than their work. Believe it or not, there are some that only like to talk about their work, but most people like to have a conversation about the world in general, families, heartaches, rough times growing up, what they had to go through to get here. And one of the things that's brilliant about her interviewing skills, and that I didn't know until I listened to these, is her follow-up. She isn't one of those people that has a list of questions. She asks them, the person answers them, and she goes, that's wonderful. And now, may I ask you, go to the next question. She would just go, well, now, wait a minute. When you said that, well, what? Well, how did that work? Well, how did you get there? Did they pay you for that? I mean, she really, she cared. She cared about the people she was talking to. She really wanted to know. And it is, don't you just love the fact that you feel like you're a fly on the wall, gone back in time, in a time capsule, in some of the most vivid, you know, entertainment history. It's just right there in front of you, and you're sitting in a room, and they don't know you're there, but Gene Kelly's talking to you about his life. Yeah. I mean, it's just the best, you know.
And I found that with so many of these, I now have to go to Google to see who's still alive and who isn't. Most of these folks are gone now. There were some names, Aldo Ray, people I kind of heard of but really didn't, but took my first time really hearing anything in depth with them. And I found it interesting. You're right. Not only did your mother follow up, but sometimes like Julie Newmar, you know, who today is over 80, I think it is. And yet at that time she wasn't married. And your mother, why aren't you married? You know, and what do you want in a man? And will you change your bedroom design for him? Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
I would.
Yeah, right. And I was also that time warp capsule of, I mean, you know, about it as well. All the focus on doing things for a man when she was speaking to women. Arlene Dahl, oh my God, the interview with Arlene Dahl is priceless. And a lot of the people talking about jobs that they would get, or if they were a secretary. She was talking to somebody who was a secretary, and they never used a pronoun that was feminine. It was always, well, when your boss comes in and he wants to do this, well, what should you do for him? That is, you'd like the concept that there would be a woman who would be in charge of some of this stuff, even though my mother was running a studio at the time. But, you know, like...
Right.
And I had to be struck.
Look, this was 64-65. So in many ways, I can't find a great word to use. But, you know, it talk about a moment in time. I almost want to say it's old world. I mean, this was pre-women's lib. This is, you just wouldn't get these questions today. A woman wouldn't be expected. Right. Why aren't you married? And what should a husband expect from you? And a lot of the men were asked, you know, I think with Steve Allen was pretty positive about Jane Meadows. But there were some who like, you know, the wife needs to be quiet. I think it might have been Milton May. The wife needs to be quiet. I need to be the star. I need to, and I'm stunned as I'm hearing this, but I'm going, it's 1964.
Yeah, but how cool that they were honest enough to say that, too. Nobody would have the nerve to say stuff like that either.
You
got an insight. And, you know, there was also this sense of tremendous skill and talent with most of these people. Like, they really worked for the notability that they had at the time. There were no people that came up just because, you know, they took a few pictures of themselves on Instagram or, you know, famous for doing nothing. These were people who had real interesting lives and careers, and she got down to the bottom of it. Like, how did you get from there to here? What did that mean? And she was fascinated about raising children. She was fascinated about asking other parents, how do you do it? How do you get their respect? Do you feel guilty that you're working and you're not home with your kids? All these things that she was trying to work out for herself in her own mind, you know?
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you.
Therapy.
I had this sense. Yeah, I had, that's exactly it. I had, because back then you didn't do therapy. It wasn't appropriate. And I had
this sense
that she herself wondered how to raise Lucy and little Desi.
Of course, yeah. Mm-hmm.
There wasn't anybody to talk to back then.
Her best friend, you know, one of her best friends in the world was Hedda Hopper, because she lived around the corner. But Hedda Hopper was Hedda Hopper. She's going to write things down if she hears it, you know, so you got to be very careful what you tell those people. And when she was going through her divorce with my dad, she didn't go to a therapist. She didn't have all the things that are like prerequisites these days, marriage counselors and those things. You couldn't. People would have you, you know, sent away. They would, you'd never work again.
Yeah.
It just wasn't done. So this was a kind of communal therapy for the people she was talking to, you know?
So not only did I find out who's living, who's not, but then people like Hedda Hopper, you mentioned her, I went onto eBay to buy a signed book of the book that she wrote from back then. And Eve Arden, who said, I'm going to write a book of my travels through Italy and Europe, which never happened, but there was a book later on. I find myself sort of, it becomes a homework project to me with each one of these. There's also the special episodes, Lucy at Home. There's Christmas episodes with you and Desi and Gary. And do you remember, I mean, sometimes they kind of sound a little scripted to me. Do you have any memory of taping them? Were they a bit scripted?
She wrote anything that she decided to talk off the top of her head about. I know that because I found some of those papers from time to time. Nobody else wrote them, but she would say, I want to talk today about, I'm going to do a show about. And so she would write. She'd write it out. And then she's a good actress, so when she would read it, she would try not to make it like she was reading it, but you could tell the difference. You know, she was reading something that she had given good thought to and wanted people to know. And then I thought, that's kind of cool, too, because to the best of my knowledge, my mother never really officially wrote anything. She didn't really do the writing of her autobiography. Betty Hanna Hoffman did that by her answering questions into a tape recorder. So she was taking my mother's actual words, but then she decided what to use and how to put it in and fill in the blanks, right? Yeah. So my mother never really wrote that. She never wrote magazine articles, to the best of my knowledge. And yet, she was asked to write from time to time for this radio show, and she was really good at it. What she wrote was good stuff, you know? I was listening, saying, Mom, that's good. I love that.
I was always intrigued when she would go into, with a couple of people, she went into politics. Gene Kelly, who very quickly went to the fact that he was sort of liberal in his view. She asked Andy Griffith, who said, I made a mistake of supporting somebody once. He lost, and I'll never do that again. And I realized that she talked to them about their politics, and I cover politics for WGN, so it was especially interesting for me. She never talked, but to my knowledge, she never, or even your father, other than the famous McCarthy hearings thing where your dad said there's nothing red about her except her hair, and even that's not real. Did they talk about, were they big into politics, or was that just a taboo topic
not
at home, or
at
did you
all.
Know where
well,
they stood?
My father probably was a little more interested. He would read every paper. He was very knowledgeable about everything that was going on in the government, but he didn't spend a lot of time stumping for it, anybody. Once in a while they did. They were on the road. They went out for Eisenhower, invited to special things. But for the most part, they stayed out of politics. And mostly my mother stayed out because she was treated so terribly by that incident where she, had tried to please her grandpa when it was time to sign up and vote. She was old enough to sign up to vote and register.
Yeah.
He insisted that they register, that she and her brother register. And she said, I don't know anything about politics and I don't want to be involved in politics. And he goes, no, you have to care. You must. And he was for the working man. And, he was, and communism in those days when she was in her 20s was just like the Green Party. It was just another, it was just as bad to check the box Republican as it was to check a box, communist. And then she never used it. She never voted. She just did it to please him, and years went by. And then it was canceled. They canceled her card because she never used it. She never attended any meetings for any kind of thing until the McCarthy hearings came up, and somebody found that old card, and they took the canceled part off of it. They said, they're not going to show that part, and they gave it to Walter Winchell, and he let it fly that she was a communist, card-carrying communist, and it almost ruined their entire career.
And, absolutely, and it did ruin careers for
some. It didn't, thank God, because they proved that it was a lot of garbage. But she was so wounded and burned by that she thought, I'm never, ever going to get involved in politics. And she used to literally tell me not to. Like, don't even bother. Don't vote. She told me, don't vote. thank God I didn't listen.
You can't win because, these days, if you do come out on one side or the other, you're losing half the audience. And as much as you should say, sort of like when Barbara Streisand does a concert and she's very liberal in what she does, and sometimes she'll get booze and she'll, you know what you got for when you paid for this. But I did, in talking to Roz Kind, who I'm sure you know well, she did the radio with me and podcast. And I sort of talked to her about her views. And she said, here's the thing. People say you're a celebrity, you should keep quiet. She said, but I look at you and go, what do you do? Oh, you're a plumber? How come you get to talk and I don't?
Right.
It was an interesting kind of an answer, right? Why does the plumber talk?
Take into consideration that, yes, you may offend some people who may not want to come see your shows anymore. And if you don't care about that and you're willing to take that chance, you may also affect a few people who didn't know you felt that way and agree with you and will come and buy tickets to your show.
Right.
It's a choice. I mean, studios don't like you to take sides. They don't like their celebrities and their stars to be on the soapbox about one side or the other. I think the thing that's changed in the last few years is that it's not just politics anymore. It's really behavior towards other people and how to be a human. And if a particular person in a particular party is not being human in their responses to other people or the way they react to the world, or they're lying or they're whatever, they're just not being a good human, then I think that's above and beyond politics. That's when all the good people of the world have to stand up and go, whoa, whoa, whoa. That's not what we stood for here. That's not the Constitution. That's not what we do here. You can't do that. And I think we should call out everybody who falls into that category.
Fair
we
enough.
Have to get to the truth, and people don't tell the truth, they should be called out on it, period.
Yeah. Let me ask you, one of the things your mom talks about in a couple of interviews, she talks about how she wasn't funny. Of course, I've always read that your father was the funny one, but she herself says, I'm not. I can execute in a very funny way, but I'm not the one with ideas or script. Is that what you found true, even around the house, in her daily life?
I'll flip the question on you. When you were listening to all these radio shows, and you said you've really been addicted to it and heard a lot of them, could you say that by listening to this, you would say Lucille Ball was really hilariously funny?
No, in fact, what I said was she's incredibly smart. She's clearly not Lucy Ricardo. And this is
a
chance, because your mother always had that deeper voice than people know. And I just thought, this is the Lucy I wish I could have played backgammon with one day to really get to know the real Lucy.
Well, that's who she is. She wasn't always finding things funny in what was being said, or finding a way to make what she's saying funnier than what it, she didn't do that. She was really interested in life and in people, and she was very responsible, and she took a lot of time taking care of business at home with her children, and it didn't leave a lot of time for that. My father didn't tell jokes. He wasn't a joke teller, but he saw life crooked and funny in that respect, and I think it's the Cuban in him. It's the survivor in him. They're incredible people, those, Cubans, Latins, to begin with.
Sure.
And they do have a tenacity and a way of looking and making fun of what just happened because, hey, can't get any worse, right? That kind of a thing. Can't get any worse. Let's enjoy. Have a drink. Let's have a good time.
As you listen to these, and of course, you probably have some people say, what's it like hearing your mother's voice? Please, you can't go a day without hearing your mother's voice, your father's voice, everywhere you go.
Right.
It's everywhere.
Right.
But I had always seen pictures of your grandmother, Dee Dee, your mom's mom, but I'd never heard her before. And I'm thinking, you probably don't have that much footage of your grandmother.
No, that's exactly that's the exact example that I use when I tell people about why it's special to hear these things, because every once in a while, in the background, my grandmother will walk in, or the tapes I have of my mother talking into the tape recorder, answering the questions about her life to Betty Hanna Hoffman. I can hear Dee Dee in the background, and those are the ones that I'm glued to, because there isn't a lot of tape or footage of my grandmother speaking. So I'm encouraging people today to try to put their own voice down on at least an audio tape, if not a video, and save it, make sure that there is a copy somewhere, or put your grandparents down on, audio tape so that your kids can listen to them later. You don't realize how valuable it is until they're not there anymore, and you've started to forget how they sound.
That is so true. My brother got a reel-to-reel for his bar mitzvah when he was 13, 55 years ago, and he did that. At a Hanukkah party, he put my grandparents, everybody on it, and they're all gone now. They're all gone.
Yeah.
And that tape did survive, and you listen to us sounding like little kids, but you're so right. These are just, and of course, today people can make movies and videos and keep their loved ones with them forever. I have to ask you something that
they don't spend time asking the questions and really having the elders, if you will, in the family on tape before it's too late, and it's a good thing to do.
Yeah, we should have done a whole DD show.
I
have to ask you a question. This has always bothered me forever, and I'm hoping you can clear this up. And it really always bothered me in terms of something I hope wasn't true, which is there was a lot of writing that said in your mom's, in the last part of her life, that she was very sad. I mean, Life with Lucy, her last series, was not as successful as the other ones, and that she was clear to some that she didn't think people loved her anymore, and she didn't think she was popular anymore, which could not be any less true in the world. But I always hoped and prayed that wasn't true, that to her dying day, she knew how beloved she was.
Well, I'm sure she did know how beloved she was by the fans and the greater population. I do believe she always knew that and always respected that tremendously. It meant a great deal to her. She would tell me that, and I just know that's true. From my father as well. But I think, yeah, maybe her, you know, actor persona started to wonder if the business, if the entertainment business per se, cared about her anymore. Because she was a worker. She wanted to work. She wanted to be an actress and continue to do, to give her gifts. And she could pretend for a while that it was okay to kind of retire and just do a few guest spots here and there. But when they came and asked her to do another series, she toyed with it for a while, but you could tell she really, really, really wanted to do it. You know, like, oh, God, yes, that would be so much fun. And it was not good, and they trashed it, and then they canceled it. That's never happened to her ever. And that did upset her tremendously, I must say. She went into a depression that she didn't really ever come out of. She didn't live long enough to come out of it. But
well, that it is sad, and I just... Hopefully she has to know. Even when she passed, man, that was, I still remember that moment.
Oh,
how terrible.
Of course.
It was.
Of course she does. And the fact that it's 30 some years later and it's like she's never gone anywhere. It's just almost more popular now than before, if that's even possible.
Right. And always will be. As you said, the first time I heard, I think it was Sally Struthers, the new interviews you've done, and I didn't quite get what you were doing at first, and then I realized, then I got it, that you were using your mom's voice in questions you asked to other people, but you asked, as you said, Struthers, Fran Drescher, all those people. So I just thought this could be fun for me and maybe for you. Can I ask you a few of those questions? Nothing embarrassed, nothing terrible, but a few questions
see
maybe if your mom asked you what you would say.
Because I actually did one of those myself. I haven't heard it be broadcast, but I
haven't yet either. So,
yeah.
Well, maybe let's see if I can ask you a couple things you didn't ask yourself from your mom.
I'm happy to do that.
All right. Do you feel strongly about something? And if so, what?
Yeah. Every time I ask somebody that question, I was thinking, how do they nail it down and just pick one thing? I feel strongly about a whole lot of stuff, so much stuff that I can hardly get through my day. I go from channel to channel and hat to hat, and they take different preference in my life. Right now, I think, boy, if I had to just pick one thing, I guess it would all crystallize and be kindness. It would come down to kindness. Mm-hmm. I need this planet and the people in it to learn to be kinder to one another, or we're not going to make it. Yeah. We have a lot of problems to solve here, and we have to stop fighting in the life raft. Mm. You know, we have to sit down, stop fighting over the water, stop yelling at one another, and realize we're lost at sea, and there's only so many rations on board ship here, and we have to figure out how we're going to survive. And people are just being stupid and arguing about the dumbest things, and we got a lot of work to do, so... If there's something I'm concerned about, I feel deeply about, yes, I feel deeply about a lot of things, about climate change, about peace on Earth, about child abuse, about, women's rights. But we're not going to solve any of those things until we stop fighting amongst ourselves. I also feel like I cannot get the words out of my mouth anymore. United States of America. We're not. At this moment, we are not the United States anymore. And we haven't been for a really long time. I would like to get that back.
I would love to talk to you for hours about that. And I'm also watching my clock, and there's so much I want to ask you about because that's so profound.
But I get it.
But let me ask you this. This is my question based on some of the things she said. What characteristics of your parents, because we all know your parents, do you embody or did you let go?
Well, it's a process, right? It's a process, an ongoing process. And, I like to think, and I'm pretty sure that I have embodied by osmosis their ability to be professional, truly professional in their work, play by the rules, be responsible. And that means you show up on time, you do what you're supposed to do, you do what ought to be done by you, you don't put other people down, you don't blame other people for what's your fault. You behave like a responsible, professional actor / dancer / director, whatever it is that you're doing. And I think that my family is really important to me. Taking care of my clan is important to me, making sure that we're all okay and healthy. And that was always important to both of them as well. And I've tried to not take something with me. It's not because they did anything on purpose that I'd never want to see or do again. But I have tried to balance the work life, family life a little bit more effectively because we know more now and we have more help. I didn't fare all that well, I don't think, with them being gone so long and working as hard as they did, no matter what the brilliance was that they created that we all still have 70 years later. Just as a family, it wasn't so helpful. And so I've tried to do that differently. Some of it has been successful. Some of it apparently didn't make a damn bit of difference. You've always tried to improve a little bit, and I'm sure my kids are desperately trying to improve on the mistakes that I made in their lives. It's the way it goes.
I have 20 more questions, but I want to talk about a couple of the other things coming out before we have to wrap, because there is a biography coming out made by Ronnie Howard. I guess we're supposed to call him Ron now. Ron Howard, you did a biography of your parents. I think it was in 93 with the Constantinos.
Yes.
You won an Emmy Award for that. What made you say, yeah, that's something we haven't seen in a while, a biography of Lucy?
Yeah, right. Well, that's what I said to them. Why do you want to do this? I did one, and it's really good. I won an Emmy. You don't need to do this. And they said, well, we'd like to take a fresh look. We think that with all the new generations that have come forth since you did that one, that there's a different way to look at it. And we'd like to include this and this and this and this. And I, you know, first of all, it's Ron Howard, and it was this wonderful company called White Horse Pictures, Nigel and Jeannie, Nigel Sinclair and Jeannie Alphonse. And they asked Amy Poehler to direct it. And just like everything what sounded like, this is going to be class A work. This is going to be professionally, beautifully done. And it's time for somebody else to take a crack at it. Yeah, let's see what you can come up with and see. And so I trusted them enough. I opened up everything to them, including all the interviews I did for my documentary, pieces I didn't use in the documentary, all the footage that we shot, all of our home movies, the Let's Talk to Lucy show, all the photographs, everything I could think of, love letters, everything. I just said, okay, what do you need? What do you want? I'll help you as much as I can. And I have a feeling it's going to be absolutely brilliant.
When do we see it?
I'm not sure. Amazon Pictures liked it so much that because they're making the feature film, they're in Sorkin, Nicole Kidman, and Javier, that they wanted to, I guess, sort of control when this would come out. So they bought the documentary from Ron Howard's company, and they're going to try to market the two together. Either one will come out first and then the other one, or vice versa. I'm not sure. It's kind of
perfect.
Up to them.
So you mentioned the Aaron Sorkin project being the Ricardos with Nicole Kidman and Javier Bardem. And so just a couple of quick things about that. First of all, I mean, what's that phrase when Aaron Sorkin does something, he eats the wallpaper, whatever it is. I love everything he does. It's just amazing. And he does great work. But with regard to this, first of all, there was a lot of screaming on Facebook and everywhere that people didn't think Nicole and Javier should take the role. I love the fact that you went onto Facebook and said, stop it. They're good. I approve. And then I once went on after you and said, Lucy's okay with it, so shut up. My question for you, as we wait for that movie being the Ricardos, and it's actually about Lucy and Desi. It's not about Ricky and Lucy, correct?
And that's what people automatically assumed, because he called it being the Ricardos, too, didn't help. It's a clever title. When you see the movie, you'll understand why he named it that. But everybody thinks it's a redo, a remake, a reboot of I Love Lucy, like the Bewitched movie or something. And I said, no, it's about Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz and their relationship. And he chose to place it where? You got to place it somewhere. Where is it going to take place? When is it going to take place? He's placing it during the week of the filming of one of their shows. But that's not what it's about. And they very, very, very rarely in the film even play Lucy and Ricky Ricardo.
Yeah.
Most of the time they're either rehearsing or they're dealing with other things that are happening in their lives at that time. But you get a really good sense of what it must have been like to shoot a show like that in the 50s, in the beginning of television. And he really did get my mom and my dad accurate. He got them to a T, what he wrote. And I'm pretty sure that Javier, I just spoke to Javier yesterday at great length, and I think what he will do with the essence of Desi Arnaz will be brilliant. I'm sure that Nicole's heart and what she's planning on, where she's trying to go into my mother's psyche and her heart, is going to be spot on. This is not a look-alike contest. It's, you know, it's not a costume party. It's a story about two people and their lives and what they faced together, the good, the bad, and the not so good.
And I kind of get the title because they probably were.
That's all. It's not a full, it's not a biopic, which is why it's nice to have the documentary side by side.
And I'm, Yeah, and I'm kind of guessing that the sense of being the Ricardos is a sense of that's probably something they faced their whole life, having to show people. And they weren't the Ricardos. They were Lucy and Desi with all the stripes and problems
oddly
that real
enough,
people had, but people didn't want to accept it.
But I'm not. Oddly enough, the message he has is a little bit different than that. It's a little bit more psychological than that. But I think, and I won't spoil it by telling you, but I think they'll get it. And they'll go, oh, yeah.
Gotcha. Now, Hollywood Reporter did say the other day, Hollywood Reporter reported the other day that there were some things that you said are not accurate in that movie, but it is Aaron Sorkin, so I guess he gets some dramatic license. But when all is said and done, did the issues you have get resolved?
I don't know yet. I don't know if he left that scene in the movie or not. He may have. He wanted to write this scene for dramatic purposes, and I said, well, it's brilliant. It's a brilliant scene, Aaron. I love the dialogue. I love the ending line. I love Mom's whole character in this. If only it had ever happened, and it was a scene about her getting released from her contract at MGM after a picture called The Big Street. And I said, first of all, The Big Street was done for RKO, and she was never released from any of her contracts, not at MGM or RKO. So that's kind of a big fake fact that I don't think you want to put in there, because people take this literally, and especially if I'm involved or the family's involved, they're going to think it's all very accurate. I don't pay any attention to when he takes, quote-unquote, literary license as something else. That's when he did that, too, but that's okay. Like, you take two incidents that did happen, but they didn't happen that week. That's okay. He's going to make them both happen that week. All right. I can deal with that. They actually happened.
Right.
And for dramatic purposes, you want to make them happen that week together? If you can pull that off, that's fine. This was actually just not true. For her biography, you know, her life story, not true at all. He changed it back to, okay, it wasn't MGM, it was RKO, but he still made the thing happen where she gets fired from her contract because he wanted to make up how she got into radio. Well, it's brilliantly written. As he cannot write anything that's not really written.
Right.
But it's just not true. So anyway, but I knew I did not have the final say on that. And he may or may not have left it in the movie. It isn't going to make or break the film one way or another. It just was. And as I told the guy from Palm Springs Life, I said, I'm not bitching and moaning about this. I'm just saying, because he said, was it all exactly right? Was it this and this? And I said, well, some of it is. Some of it's theatrical license. And there were a few scenes that were, you know, like, wait, that didn't happen. And he had acknowledged that he made it up, but for some reason he was going to leave it in. And I was like, well, I don't approve of that. And that's why I said it was quite funny. The day that they shot the scene happened to be the day, one of the 2 days that I was on the set watching them film. And I said, wouldn't you know, it's my punishment to watch this. But at the end of the shooting of the scene, all of the sprinklers went off on the Queen Mary. They were shooting on the Queen Mary and all the sprinklers went off in the set and destroyed the set. And they probably got the scene anyway. Like, they probably had enough film on it that they can use what they got. But I thought it was quite funny. That's why I was laughing with the gentleman from Palm Springs Life, because I said, maybe somebody upstairs didn't like that scene either.
I was going to say, sounds like Mom and Dad are watching over and making things happen.
My attitude is the same with you as I was with him. I wasn't upset, but that's what people do. They want to sell another bunch of papers, so they pull out that one out-of-context thing. Lucy was very upset, and she wanted them to take these scenes out of the movie, and, you know, no, that's not how it went down.
Right. There are so many, you know, the rumors that through the years, the, you know, the contract provision that said Vivian had to be 10 pounds more than Lucy, which turned out to be a birthday joke. Just so many things out there. But how do you control that your whole life? Right. I mean, this is, you know, you can't. And all you brother and you can do is simply monitor the wealth of family values that are there. Before I let you go, I want to talk about you for a moment. I know you had some concerts. You think I didn't follow you, too. I do. You had some concerts scheduled. I believe you are getting ready to perform. Is it January at 54 Below? You're going to get to New York?
Yes. Yeah, 4 nights at 54 Below, January 19th through the 22nd. I'll be in Memphis for a night before that at the Orpheum Theater on the 15th. And soon after that, in April, I know I'm going back to Florida to the Crest Theater, the 11th and 12th of April, the 10th in Aventura of April. But it's a slow go putting all the canceled shows back on the schedule because, as you know, it's just changed on a daily basis. One day we're going to get back, and then it isn't. So
We haven't at our studios, haven't had a live guest in a year and a half, and we thought we were going to start it, and then boom, back we were to 6 feet apart, you know,
well,
sitting on set.
They're doing the right thing by being cautious. I'm all for that. I'm all for
That's
cautious.
Right. And, is Chicago on your schedule? Is Chicago on the schedule?
Chicago so far is not this year, but it could be. It could be very, it could very well be. I'd love to be back in Chicago.
And I have some thoughts about where that could happen. So I would love to talk to you.
Talk it up. I'm happy
Trust
to do
me,
that.
I want to just talk to you forever and keep going, but this is it. So, well, with my thanks for all your time, Lucy Arnaz, and can't wait to see you on the road again and catching up. And by the way, I have to say, I slept in your father's bed. I never told you that.
Where? Did you wake him up?
Kay Ballard was a good friend of mine. She, of course, has your dad's home, and I stayed there and slept in Desi's bed. And there's a story that goes with that I'll tell you some other time. But as we sat at dinner, she's pointing out the chandelier from Jerry Lewis, and B. Arthur sat in that chair, and, you know, Kay was wonderful. So, and I took an orange. It was an orange in her backyard, and I took it home. So much to talk about. Lucy Arnaz,
cool.
Thank you so much. Please say hi to your husband, Larry. And
I
the kids, appreciate your time, and I sure hope to talk to you again.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure talking with you, too.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's PaulLisnek. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes, and tune in each week to hear more insider scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.